Good morning and welcome to Claude Daily, the podcast that keeps you current on everything happening in the world of Claude and Anthropic. I'm Alex.
And I'm Sam. It is Wednesday, May 13th, 2026, and Alex, I have to be honest with you. I looked at the rundown this morning and I had to double check that I was reading the right document. Because some of this news is genuinely wild.
It is a packed show today. We've got a major infrastructure story that involves a partnership you probably did not see coming. We've got a development pattern shift that's already changing how serious builders work with Claude. We've got two significant new features in Claude Code that I think are going to have developers very excited. And we've got a connector story out of the legal technology world that's a really concrete example of Claude doing serious high-stakes work.
And when you say the partnership you didn't see coming, you are underselling how surprising this is. Like, when I tell you who is involved, people are going to have questions.
They are. And we're going to get into all of it. But let's start at the top. The biggest story of the day, and honestly, probably the week.
Let's go.
All right, Anthropic and SpaceX. Those two companies now have a compute deal. The short version, Anthropic has gained access to Colossus One. That is the GPU cluster operated by xAI, Elon Musk's artificial intelligence company out of Memphis, Tennessee. And when I say GPU cluster, I want you to understand the scale here. We are talking about 220,000 NVIDIA GPUs and over 300 megawatts of power capacity.
Okay, hold on. Colossus One is an xAI facility. xAI is Elon Musk's company. And Anthropic, which has been, let's say, philosophically and publicly quite distinct from Elon Musk's general approach to AI development. Anthropic is now accessing compute infrastructure that was built to run Grok?
That is exactly what is happening.
I need a moment. I genuinely need a moment with this. Because on one level, yes, it's just business. You need GPUs, you go where the GPUs are. Infrastructure is infrastructure. But on another level, this is surreal given everything that has been said publicly by various parties over the past few years.
Right. Musk has been very vocal about his views on safety-focused AI labs. There's been litigation, there's been public sparring, there's been a whole history of friction. And yet
here we are. Anthropic is running on Elon's hardware.
The deal was announced in the first week of May 2026, so this is very fresh. And the detail that really puts it in context is that the agreement was struck, apparently, even as the ongoing tension between the parties was very much a live thing. This wasn't resolved through some detente. The business logic just won out.
Which is actually kind of a remarkable data point about the state of the compute market right now. Because if you can set aside what appears to be genuine ideological disagreement to do a 220,000 GPU deal, the pressure for compute access must be extremely intense.
That's a really important framing. The compute shortage is real. Anthropic has been growing rapidly, Claude's usage has been expanding, and there's only so much supply of frontier-class GPU infrastructure in the world. When a facility like Colossus One has spare capacity, and you need that capacity, the calculation becomes pretty clear.
So who blinks first in that scenario? I'm curious whether this was Anthropic approaching xAI or whether xAI was looking for revenue on underutilized capacity.
We don't have the full picture on the negotiation dynamics. What we know is the outcome. And the outcome is that Anthropic now has access to one of the most powerful GPU clusters on the planet. That's the material fact, regardless of how the conversation started.
300 megawatts of power capacity. I keep coming back to that number because I want people to understand what that represents. That's the power draw of a small city. You're talking about a facility that has more power infrastructure than most municipalities. This is not a server room with some racks in it. This is a purpose-built industrial AI supercomputing facility.
It really is. And the location, Memphis, Tennessee. That's been an interesting choice by xAI because the power infrastructure in that region has historically been relatively inexpensive, and there's been significant industrial capacity available. It's a pattern you see with data center infrastructure broadly. These facilities going to places with cheap power and available land.
Right. And now Anthropic gets to benefit from that site selection without having built it themselves.
Exactly. And I think the practical implications for Claude users are real and tangible. More compute in Anthropic's hands, whether they own it outright or access it through partnerships, means more capacity for inference. Which means Claude can handle more simultaneous requests, which means fewer capacity constraints during peak usage periods. It also means faster timelines for training more capable models, because training runs are fundamentally compute-bound.
So for anyone who has ever gotten a slowdown during a busy period, or wondered why response times vary, this is the kind of news that affects your actual experience. This is not abstract corporate strategy. This translates to performance.
Direct line from GPU count to user experience. And the competitive picture shifts too. Because one of the things observers have noted about Anthropic relative to, say, Google or Microsoft-backed OpenAI is that those players have enormous internal infrastructure. Anthropic's external partnerships have been meaningful, but this deal puts them in a different category of compute access.
Can we talk about what this means for XAI too? Because I think there's an interesting angle there, like renting out Colossus One capacity to Anthropic. That's acknowledging that XAI has more capacity than it currently needs for its own operations, right?
Or it's a strategic revenue decision. Either you have spare capacity, or you decided the revenue justifies the sharing. And in an environment where building this infrastructure is extraordinarily capital intensive, monetizing it when you can makes sense from a pure business standpoint.
So, in a weird way, Anthropic paying to use XAI infrastructure might actually be subsidizing Grok's future development, which is, I mean, that's the kind of recursive competitive dynamic that only exists in AI.
Welcome to the industry. But okay, this story came wrapped in another piece that I think is really important for developers, and that's the Claude skills angle. Because the piece we were reading came from a really thorough test, 75 individual test cases on Claude skills, and it reached a pretty significant conclusion.
Yeah, let's get into that. Because the infrastructure story is the flashy headline, but the skills story might actually be more practically important for a lot of people listening right now.
So the finding is this. Claude skills are replacing prompt libraries as the standard development pattern. And if you've been building production applications with Claude, you understand why that matters. The prompt library was the dominant pattern for a long time. You had your carefully tuned prompts. You stored them somewhere. You referenced them when you needed them. It worked, but it had problems.
The problems being, and I want to make sure we articulate these clearly, versioning nightmares, portability headaches, and the total absence of any intelligent loading mechanism.
Exactly. Walk me through what you mean by versioning nightmares.
Okay, so imagine you have a prompt that governs how Claude handles customer support interactions. You've spent weeks tuning it. It works great. And then someone on your team decides it needs one sentence changed. They change it. Now you have a new version. But was the old version saved anywhere? Do you know what changed? Can you roll back if the new version behaves worse? In most prompt library setups, the answer to all of those questions is some version of kind of, sort of, maybe. It's not real version control.
And skills bring actual versioning to that workflow. You can pin to a specific version. You can deploy a new version without breaking existing integrations. You can track the diff between versions. It's treating prompts like code, with the discipline that software engineering has developed around managing code over time.
Which is long overdue, honestly. Prompts are the logic layer of these applications. Treating them as unversioned text files has always been a weird choice.
The portability piece is the second major advantage. So, with a prompt library, if you've built a really effective behavior pattern for one application and you want that same behavior in a different context, you're basically copying and hoping. And then you have two copies that will inevitably drift apart as one gets updated and the other doesn't.
The drift problem. Every team that's been building with AI for more than 6 months knows the drift problem. You have the real prompt, and then you have the four other places where a slightly different version lives, and nobody's quite sure which one is current.
Skills are portable in a more structural way. The behavior is defined once and referenced consistently across contexts. You change it in one place, those changes propagate.
And then the third piece, the automatic context-aware loading, this is the one that I find most interesting technically. Explain that for people who haven't been following this closely.
So with a traditional prompt library, you have to explicitly say, load this prompt now. A human or some code in your application layer is making the decision about which prompt to apply to which situation. Context-aware loading means Claude can infer from the nature of the request which skill is relevant and load it automatically.
So if I'm asking Claude to help me debug some code, it recognizes that context and pulls in the appropriate debugging skill. If I switch to asking about documentation, it loads the documentation skill without me having to explicitly switch modes.
That's the vision. And the 75 test piece is interesting precisely because it documents where this works and where it doesn't. And the finding is that automatic loading isn't perfect. There are edge cases where ambiguous context leads to the wrong skill being selected.
Which is valuable information, because this works great tells you to adopt it. Here are the specific failure modes tells you how to adopt it safely.
Right. If you know that context ambiguity is where the selection breaks down, you can design your application to provide more explicit context in those cases. You can use skills for the clear cases and keep manual specification for the genuinely ambiguous ones.
It's not a bug, it's a design parameter. You know the envelope of reliable performance, so you build within it.
And honestly, I think the bigger cultural point here is that this represents a maturation of the development ecosystem. The early era of building with large language models was kind of artisanal. You cultivated your prompts, you had your collection. There was craft in it, but not a lot of engineering discipline. Skills are part of a broader shift toward treating AI application development more like software engineering.
The spreadsheet era is ending.
Moment of silence for the spreadsheet.
It served us well, but yeah. Versioning, portability, intelligent loading, those are engineering features, not just workflow features. And I think that distinction matters for the kinds of applications that can be built responsibly at scale.
And reliably. Auditability. If something goes wrong in production and you need to understand why Claude behaved a certain way, having version skills means you can look back and say, this was the behavior definition that was active at that time. That's huge for debugging and for accountability.
Legal and compliance teams are going to love that, by the way. Show me what instructions the model was operating under at the time of this incident. With prompt libraries, that question is hard to answer. With version skills, it has an answer.
That's a really good point. Auditability isn't just about developer experience. It's about being able to run these systems responsibly in regulated or high-stakes environments. Okay, so big infrastructure news, big development pattern news. Let's shift to the feature level because Claude Code dropped two things that I think are genuinely going to change how developers work day to day.
Yes, let's do it.
Fast mode for Claude Opus. This is the headline feature. So, Opus is the flagship model in the Claude lineup. Most capable, best reasoning, best at complex tasks. And historically, that capability has come with a trade-off. Opus is slower. Not unusably slow, but meaningfully slower than the smaller, faster models.
Which has created this tension where you want to use the best model, but you switch to a faster one because you're in a flow state and you cannot handle waiting 4 or 5 seconds per response.
Fast mode solves that. 2.5 times faster responses. Using the /fast command in Claude Code.
2.5 times. I want to sit with that for a second. That's not like a 10% improvement. That's transformative if you're doing interactive work. If Opus was taking, let's say, 4 seconds to respond, fast mode is bringing that to under 2 seconds. That's a different cognitive experience.
It really is. Because the research on developer productivity is pretty clear that response latency matters disproportionately to its actual duration. A 2-second wait feels shorter than a 4-second wait in a way that isn't just linear. The flow state is preserved better when responses feel immediate.
And the cost structure, $30 per million input tokens and $150 per million output tokens. So it is more expensive than standard Opus operation. But I think the framing from the docs is exactly right. This is not meant to replace your default configuration. It's a tool you reach for in specific situations.
Right. The intended use cases are explicitly listed as rapid iteration and live debugging. Moments where you're going back and forth quickly and latency is the bottleneck. And the toggle nature of it, you turn it on for the fast session, you turn it off when you're back to more deliberate work, means you're in control of when you're spending at that rate.
And I think there's an important reframe here. We sometimes think about paying more per token as wasteful, but if fast mode saves a developer 2 hours in a debugging session because they're not constantly breaking their concentration waiting for responses, the return on investment is obvious.
It's an investment in your own productivity. The cost per token is the wrong unit to optimize if you're thinking about it from the perspective of what you actually produce.
Hours of developer time versus dollars of API cost. Hours almost always win.
Exactly. And I also think this has competitive implications. One of the criticisms of the most capable AI models across the industry, not just Claude, has been that they're too slow for truly interactive use. You end up reaching for the smaller, faster, less capable model because you need something that responds in real time. Fast mode is saying, you don't have to make that trade-off. Use the best model, get fast responses when you need them.
Which means the ceiling for what you can accomplish in an interactive coding session just got higher. Because you're no longer choosing between capable but slow and fast but limited. You have capable and fast.
And that matters for the kinds of tasks where you really need Opus. Complex architectural decisions, subtle bug hunting. Work where the difference between the best model and a good model actually shows up in the output quality.
Yeah, like for a lot of tasks, the smaller models are genuinely fine. But there are these moments, I know when I hit them, where you're working on something genuinely complex and you need the model that's going to give you the deep answer, not the adequate answer. And in the past, reaching for Opus in that moment has meant accepting slower responses. Now it doesn't.
Now it doesn't. Okay, and the second feature. I would argue this one has even more long-term significance for how people use Claude Code. The slash goal command.
Okay, yes, this is the one I keep thinking about.
So the slash goal command represents a genuinely different interaction model. The standard interaction pattern with any AI assistant is, you give it a task, it does something, you evaluate the result, you prompt again. You are present at every step. You are the glue in the loop.
Right, which is fine for quick tasks, but exhausting for anything that takes 20 minutes and 30 steps.
Slash goal is designed to change that. Instead of specifying a task, you specify a completion condition. You say, keep working until this condition is true. And then there's a secondary evaluator model, a separate AI, that checks after each turn whether your condition has been satisfied. If it hasn't, the evaluator directs Claude to keep going. If it has, the process stops.
Okay, there is so much to unpack here. First, a model evaluating a model. That's a model being used as a judge for another model's output, which is actually a pattern that's been talked about in AI research for a while, but seeing it deployed as a user-facing feature in a developer tool is new.
And it's smart architecture because it decouples the working from the evaluating. The model doing the work is focused on making progress. The model doing the evaluation is focused on the specific question of whether the goal condition is met. Those are different cognitive tasks in a sense, and separating them makes both more reliable.
It's like having a QA person watching over the developer's shoulder, except the QA person is also a model, and the criteria are defined by you in advance.
Exactly. And the docs are pretty specific about what makes a good goal condition. The key is measurability and binary outcomes where possible. All unit tests are passing is a good goal condition. The code is better is not.
Because the code is better is subjective, and the evaluator can't reliably determine when that condition is met. Whereas all unit tests are passing has a definitive true or false answer.
Right. And I think this connects to something deeper about how to think about agentic AI systems. We talk about giving AI agents goals and letting them work toward them. But the quality of the goal definition is everything. If you can't describe done in a verifiable way, you're not really giving the agent a goal. You're giving it an aspiration.
Write good code until it's good enough. That's not a goal, that's vibes.
Vibes-based development discontinued in 2026.
Replaced by slash goal. But okay, what are the failure modes here? Because I immediately think about edge cases. What if the goal is technically achievable, but the model is just not finding the path?
So that's a real consideration. And the architecture presumably has a turn limit or some escalation mechanism. The evaluator loop can't run indefinitely because that would be both expensive and potentially harmful if you've described a goal that can't actually be reached with the current approach. There has to be a mechanism to break out of an unproductive loop.
Right, because otherwise you're burning compute on a session that's not converging, which is the AI equivalent of a program that's stuck in a while loop.
We've all written those. And the interesting thing about slash goal is that the completion condition you specify is doing double duty. It's the target, but it's also the escape condition. Once it's met, the loop ends cleanly.
I'm also thinking about how slash goal interacts with fast mode. Because if you're running a slash goal session, which might involve many turns, each with a substantive response, you'd normally be waiting on each of those turns. But if you've enabled fast mode, those turns are happening 2.5 times faster.
Right, and that combination could make previously impractical agentic tasks actually tractable in a real-time session. Like, here's a complex refactoring task. Get all the tests green, I'm going to get coffee. And you come back 10 minutes later and it's done.
Instead of coming back and realizing you forgot to hit enter after the last prompt and nothing happened, I'm speaking from personal experience.
The autonomous loop is the fix for that. And I think this is a genuine step in the direction of AI as a collaborator rather than just a responder. The model has initiative within the bounds you've defined. It's not waiting for your permission at every micro step.
Which requires trust in the system. And I think the architecture earns that trust to a degree. The read-only-by-default orientation of most code environments, the evaluator check at each step, the explicit completion condition you've defined, the guardrails are there.
It's autonomy with defined scope, which is actually how we want to deploy any powerful system. Not unbounded freedom, but clear objectives and checkpoints.
Okay, there is one more story to get to, and it's the connector story, which I want to make sure we give its due because I think it's genuinely significant for a specific but very important part of the audience.
And it's a really concrete example of Claude being put to work in a high-stakes domain with real social implications. Let's get into it. So the connector is called Aurora, and it's an integration between Claude and Concilio. For people who aren't familiar, Concilio is one of the major players in legal technology and e-discovery services. E-discovery, for anyone who hasn't been through litigation, it's the process of finding, collecting, reviewing, and producing electronic documents in legal cases. And it is an enormous undertaking. We're talking potentially millions of documents in a complex case.
Historically requiring armies of contract attorneys to manually review documents at, I've seen estimates of somewhere around 30 to 50 documents per hour per reviewer, which means a million document case is just staggering amounts of human labor.
And Aurora positions Claude as the natural language interface to all of that. The connector gives Claude read-only access to Concilio engagement data, document data, and matter data. And a legal professional can just ask questions in plain English.
Let's talk about the read-only architecture first, because I think it's the most important design decision here.
Go ahead.
So Claude can see everything, analyze everything, surface insights, but it cannot modify or delete anything. And in a legal context, that distinction is absolutely critical. Documents under legal hold are, by law, protected from modification. Evidence cannot be altered. Chain of custody matters. A read-only connector is not just a nice safety feature. It's a prerequisite for this integration to be legally compliant.
Right. The value in legal document review is in finding information, not in changing information. And by drawing that hard boundary, Anthropic and Concilio have made a connector that can actually be used in real legal workflows without creating liability nightmares.
The opposite architecture, where Claude could write or modify, would have been a non-starter for any serious legal deployment. You'd never get it past outside counsel, let alone a judge.
And the search capability is where the real magic is. Full-text search across a potentially enormous document corpus, combined with AI-powered investigation. Let me make that concrete. Imagine you're a paralegal on a complex commercial litigation matter and you need to find evidence of communications about a specific pricing decision from 3 years ago. Historically, you would be constructing Boolean search queries, running them, reviewing results, refining, running again. It's a skilled, time-consuming process.
With Aurora, you're just asking, show me emails or documents where executives discuss the Q3 pricing strategy. And Claude understands what you're asking, searches the corpus, and surfaces relevant materials.
Natural language as the interface to what was previously a complex technical search process.
And the automatically narrows queries to relevant context piece, that's important because without that, a broad natural language query could return way too many results to be useful. The AI needs to understand relevance, not just find keyword matches.
Right. It's not just the word pricing appears in this document. It's understanding the context of what you're asking and filtering to what's actually responsive to your question. That's the difference between a search engine and an investigation tool.
And the multi-workspace aspect. So Aurora can work across multiple matters and engagements within Concilio's platform simultaneously. If you're a legal team that's been working with a client across multiple cases over several years, you can ask questions that span that entire history.
Cross-matter analysis has traditionally been almost impossibly time-consuming to do manually. You'd need to read through documentation from multiple separate matters and synthesize them yourself. Claude can hold the context from multiple sources simultaneously in a way that would be extremely difficult for a human reviewer.
I want to address the trust question here because I think it's important. Legal professionals are, and I say this with respect because I think they're right to be, skeptical about AI. There are professional responsibility rules. There are rules of professional conduct around competence and supervision. There are client confidentiality requirements that are among the most strictly enforced in any profession.
Absolutely. And the architecture of Aurora is clearly designed with those concerns in mind. Read-only access. Access scoped to specific matters the user is authorized to work on. Natural language as the interface to control data, rather than an autonomous agent acting on the data. It's AI as a research tool in the hands of the professional, not a replacement for professional judgment.
And that framing, AI augmenting the attorney rather than replacing the attorney, is exactly the right one for regulated professional services right now. The attorney is still responsible for the work product. The attorney is still making the legal calls. Aurora is helping them find the needle in the haystack faster.
It's like having a paralegal with superhuman document retention who can hold the entire corpus in their head at once. You're not replacing the judgment layer, you're turbocharging the research layer.
And the implications for litigation economics are real. Document review is one of the primary cost drivers in complex litigation. If Aurora can reduce the time and cost of that process, you have downstream effects on who can afford to bring cases, how quickly cases resolve, and the general accessibility of the legal system.
Which is easy to lose sight of when you're talking about enterprise software, but e-discovery costs have historically been one of the mechanisms through which well-resourced parties have an advantage over less-resourced parties. If AI reduces those costs, it potentially levels something that has been systematically uneven.
That's a point worth making explicitly. This isn't just efficiency for law firm billing rates. If legal AI genuinely reduces the cost of investigating a complex case, that's a social good.
And it makes the trust and reliability architecture matter even more. This is not automating product descriptions. This is in the machinery of the legal system. The error modes have real consequences, which is why the conservative design choices, read-only, scoped access, attorney in the loop, are exactly right.
I also want to note that e-discovery is in some ways a perfect first domain for legal AI because the task is so clearly defined. You have documents, you have questions about those documents, you want to find relevant materials. It's a search and retrieval problem at scale. That plays to the genuine strengths of language models without requiring the model to make legal judgments.
Right. And it's a domain where the cost of missing a relevant document is high, but the cost of over-retrieving is manageable. You can review more documents. You just can't unmiss something you should have found. So the appropriate design orientation is broad and comprehensive search with human review of results.
Which is exactly what Aurora appears to be. Broad and comprehensive natural language search with the attorney doing the final judgment calls.
Good connector, smart design, real stakes.
All right, so let me see if I can pull together what we've covered today, because it's actually a really coherent picture when you look at it whole.
Go ahead.
So you have Anthropic securing a major infrastructure upgrade through the Colossus One deal. That's the foundation. More compute, more capacity, faster training cycles. Then you have Claude Skills displacing prompt libraries as the development standard. That's the developer infrastructure story, making it easier to build reliable and auditable applications on top of Claude. Then you have Fast Mode making the best model interactive speed fast and slash goal enabling sustained autonomous execution. Those are the productivity tools that make Claude more powerful in the hands of individual developers. And then Aurora is the connector story. Claude deployed in a specific high-stakes domain with appropriate guardrails.
Foundation. Then developer patterns. Then productivity features. Then real-world deployment. It's actually a coherent story about a platform maturing.
That's exactly what it is. And I think the SpaceX angle sometimes gets so much attention, and rightly so, it's a wild story, that people might miss the quieter but potentially more important story, which is that the development ecosystem around Claude is getting genuinely more sophisticated.
Skills. Versioning, autonomous execution, natural language interfaces to specialized data. This is not the era of, I pasted a big prompt in a box and hoped for the best. This is engineering.
The prompt in a box era is behind us.
Moment of silence.
We'll miss it. We won't, but we'll say we will.
All right. Let me give the full summary for everyone who wants the quick version. Today, May 13th, 2026. Anthropic has gained access to Colossus One, the xAI-operated GPU cluster in Memphis, Tennessee, comprising 220,000 NVIDIA GPUs and over 300 megawatts of power capacity. That is a major shift in Anthropic's compute position and one of the more unexpected partnerships you'll see in the AI industry. Claude Skills are emerging as the replacement for traditional prompt libraries as the standard development pattern, offering superior portability, proper versioning, and automatic context-aware loading of the right behaviors for the right tasks. Though real-world testing at 75 test cases shows there are still edge cases in the automatic loading to watch for. Claude Code now has fast mode for Opus. 2.5 times faster responses toggled with the slash fast command, priced at $30 per million dollar input tokens and $150 per million dollar output tokens, designed for interactive work where latency matters more than cost efficiency. Claude Code also now has the /goal command, enabling autonomous multi-turn execution with a secondary evaluator model checking after each turn whether your defined completion condition has been met. And Aurora has launched as a read-only Claude connector for Concilio's legal technology platform, bringing natural language search and AI-powered investigation to e-discovery workflows across multiple matters and document corpora.
Big day, really big day for the platform.
And there are threads here that are going to keep developing. The Anthropic XAI infrastructure relationship is brand new, and there are a lot of unanswered questions.
Right. Is this a one-time deal or an ongoing arrangement? Does this affect how Anthropic thinks about building its own infrastructure going forward? What does the operational relationship look like day to day when the companies have publicly been at odds? There's a lot of texture to that story that we don't have yet.
And on the developer tools front, Fast Mode and /goal are very new. We're going to see the community start experimenting with them heavily over the next few days, and the real-world results are going to be interesting to track.
If you have been experimenting with Fast Mode for a specific workflow, or you've tried /goal for a complex task, we really want to hear about it. The combinations people find useful, the places where it breaks down, both are valuable.
And if you're in the legal tech space and you're thinking about how Aurora fits into your practice or your firm's workflows, that's a conversation worth having publicly. There's a lot of institutional knowledge in that community about what AI can and can't be trusted to do, and it shapes better tools.
The 75 test piece on skills is a model for how we should all be talking about these tools. Here is what I tried, here is what worked, here is specifically what broke, here is what that implies for how you should build with it. More of that energy, please.
More of that energy. All right, that is Claude Daily for Wednesday, May 13th, 2026. Thank you for spending part of your morning with us.
I'm Sam. Have an excellent Wednesday, everyone.
I'm Alex. We'll be back tomorrow with whatever the next surprising thing turns out to be.
At this point, my expectations are fully uncalibrated. It could be anything.
Buckle up. Take care, everybody.